My name's Ty Fisher. I'm the headmaster at Veritas Academy. I'm not really sure why I'm saying that because you heard that just an hour ago. I am apologetic for starting a little bit late. I had 10:20 down on my start time here, and no, it was 10:10. So let's get started. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I thank you for this day, and I thank you that you are the wellspring of all truth and righteousness. I pray that as we contemplate the task of education, that you would help us to look to you and not to look to all of the false gods that would parade around us. May you set our standards. May you be our hope. May your benediction be our goal. In Jesus' name, amen. Some ideas are just so interesting, so intriguing, that you have to follow up on them. In this case, I was hooked. I don't remember if it was me that had the idea originally or someone else, but I was on the trail now, and I would not stop until I had an answer to the question. The question was an intriguing one, and initially I thought it was unanswerable. It was, what school's senior class had the highest SAT scores in the nation, or maybe I should say, in the world? I was more than impartially interested. I was driven by a sense that year of what if. We had three seniors, and these young men had pushed themselves and their classmates toward academic excellence. They competed with each other. If you were the valedictorian of that class, you had zero B's in the history of the world. If you were second in that class, you had one B. If you were third, if you were at the, should I say, bottom of your class, you had two B's. It was a tough year. Their average standardized test score that year was 1462 on the old 1600-point scale. Three, of course, is hardly enough to have a statistical average, but who cares? I was intrigued with the possibility that Veritas Academy, our little school in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, might have won the worldwide SAT lottery. How would you go about answering a question like that, I thought? Of course, you need to take it to the Oracle. We call that the internet now. I tried a few searches with words like highest SAT score ever or highest SAT score in the nation, and that's when I saw it. I stumbled onto a story there in pixels of black and white. It said, highest SAT scores in the nation. I read the story with great interest. The school was the prestigious and expensive Thomas Jefferson School in St. Louis, Missouri, a boarding school with a magnificent academic history and neat-looking buildings. They had 12 seniors that year. Their average was 1410. Their price tag was times five of us. I was ready to put a to pop the cork on the champagne, but not yet. I searched for other schools. Some did not post their averages. I questioned this. Some did, but they were not as high as Thomas Jefferson. No one else claimed to have higher SAT scores. I declared victory. I think in my highly inexact search that that year we had the highest SAT scores in the country. I did a little dance, at least in my heart. My wife doesn't like me to actually do those dances because I don't have a lot of rhythm. We had a number of graduating classes since then. For all of our graduates, at least with the most up-to-date numbers I have right now, we have an average of 1342 on the 1600-point scale. There is a 2400-point scale, but don't believe that stuff. The writing test is a hoax. Just look up some of the, there's a neat guy from MIT that figured out, he just did the math on it. MIT guys are good for math. Remember that. He did the math on how many people were grading the tests, how many tests they would have to grade, how much work time they had, and he realized that they would only be able to look at each test for 2 minutes. So he trained students in what could be looked at in 2 minutes, which were length and variation of sentence structure, and then he had them go in and write fallacious essays, like how Germany won World War II, and stuff like that. And they all got 800s because he had figured out the puzzle. So I think it's just 1,600 points. I don't pay much attention to that other 800. The colleges don't generally either. While I think that SATs, there are not many schools in the nation that have a higher average than 1342 on the 1,600 point scale. We take SATs. They've been good to us. This talk, however, is aimed at debunking this dangerous thought, that batting a 1,600 means that a student is a success. While I think that SATs, ACTs, or whatever tests you take are important, while I think that your students should do well on them, they are not the end-all and be-all of whether you're a successful school. I am going to recommend different and higher standards for measuring success, and I hope that you will adopt them, because I believe that more than anything else, these standards can focus your prayers and form your desires. I believe that these desires are on the heart of God, and if you love what He loves and cry out to Him, you are liable to see blessings beyond what our culture really hopes for. So, without further ado, what are these standards that I recommend? Before I talk about that, I'm going to talk about some ways you can fall off the log, institutions and communities and families being a blessing or a cursing based on how they define success. And I'm also going to talk about inherent metrics. So first, before I get down to talking about standards, the log, the fall, and its attendant sides. A strange way to say there are two ways to fall off the log here. Number one, here's the first way you can fall off the log. SAT scores and college acceptances mean nothing. You could say that. Plop, there you go, into the water. Part of fulfilling God's calling is educational readiness for the next level. This education that you give will either prepare kids or it will not prepare them. They will be prepared well or they will be prepared badly. When we prepare them well, others should be able to recognize this. Okay? I don't think colleges always use great standards. They're in that same kind of game, too, of having to look at gigantic numbers of applicants. Okay? I don't think they use all the best sorters, but they don't. All their sorters are not irrational. Okay? If you do an excellent job, other people should be able to recognize this. So, number one, don't say they don't mean anything. Okay? You pay for that attitude. The second thing is, though, the second way to fall off the log is SAT scores and college acceptances mean everything. Plop, there you go, into the water again. Note that these acceptances and scores are only a small, tiny part of the picture. They do not tell you everything about a child. They do not tell you sometimes the most substantial things about children. We test students coming into Veritas Academy. We use placement tests. We even placement test kindergartners, and their parents panic. Oh, they panic. And I tell their parents, your child can miss every question on this test, and they are still ready for Veritas Academy. We expect no knowledge. So what do parents do? They work with their children to prepare them for the placement test on which getting nothing right is okay. Because they're scared that I'm lying to them. Basically, the only thing we're looking for in kindergarten placement test is, can you sit still? That's the one question, okay? So don't fall off the log either way. Second point, institutions and communities and families are blessings or cursings based on how they define success, and you need to feel the gravity of that. This is what I ask this constantly to my teachers, to my board, to my prospective parents. I say, what does success look like at the end of this for you? If you're coming to Veritas Academy, we're going to get, someday you're not going to be here anymore. You know, you're going to run out of kids. And then they'll graduate and they'll go on. What does success look like at the end of this for you?
Setting these standards is very important. You must deeply question these things because once that your standards are in place, they become transparent. Okay? They're just the water that you swim around in. Everybody's expectations are quietly set by them. But you need to question, especially in a school setting or in the co-op setting, different people are going to be asking questions. In a homeschool setting, these standards are ones that you're embracing. Okay, you need to make sure you're setting them in the right and righteous places. These standards will break people if you don't watch out. You want to break them, but note that you want to break people at the right places and not the wrong places. I'll give you an almost hilarious... If it was not destructive, it would be hilarious. We had a parent once whose child moved from the grammar stage to the logic stage of education. And, you know, we read a lot of things in the grammar stage, and we learn the basic facts about all kinds of stuff in the grammar stage. Well, this child moved into seventh grade, and we started... At Veritas, back in those days, we read the Iliad in the seventh grade. Okay, and I noted that as we were reading the Iliad, the health of this child was sliding downhill. And he seemed tired every day. He had bags under his eyes. That's not, you know, I'm thinking staying up late with Xbox. Okay, that's my first thought. So finally, I kind of pulled him to the side and I said, "Man, you look like you're about ready to fall asleep. What's wrong?" And he said, "Huh, what's wrong?" You know, he was loaded for bear on this question. "Huh, what's wrong?" he said. "I have school when I go home." And I said, "Well, I know we have homework, you know, and you need to do..." He goes, "Huh, homework?" He goes, "I know every person in the Iliad. I know every person that dies. I know every person on the ship. My mom has a big blackboard in the basement, and we go over every fact in the Iliad." He said, "It takes 6 hours. I have 6 hours of school after I get off of school." I stepped back. I was like, "Oh no, I have not fully informed a parent upon the expectations of secondary school. And this child is going to die in the next 3 weeks if I don't make this next phone call." So I called and said, "Hey, you know, great effort, great passion. Stop. You're going to kill your child. I will make sure they know the pertinent facts about the Iliad, but that one guy in book 3 who's the black mists of death are settling around his face, just let him die. Let him die and move out of the story. Don't kill your son for his sake." Your standards will break people if you don't watch out. Note also that there is an inherent metric built into the classical method of education. It's a really cool metric. It's called grammar, logic, and rhetoric. These are the three big things that you're teaching, the three big skills. Do they know the facts of things? Are they able to argue cogently, logically, clearly, well? Are they able to speak well and persuasively? If you have three check marks at the end of that list when your education is complete, hurrah. Those are good three checks to have. Those are not necessarily the checks that the SAT has on it. Okay? We could say this is a flaw in our educational philosophy. I would rather think it is a flaw in the SAT, which is a slightly flawed test. But now let's get down to brass tacks, okay? Let's talk about, here are some standards that I think you should have. Standards for success. Now, by giving you these standards, I know that I'm giving you dangerous things, especially if you are a woman. Because women, I've come to the conclusion that women are better people than men. Okay? I'm apologizing for my own gender. Now, it causes more problems for women being better. I will explain. I run into people, I'm the managing editor of this project. We have 3 volumes. They are thick. You can kill bugs with these. Okay? And they look really cool. I have volume 4 started right down here. There will be 6 volumes in the project if we all live that long. Note that when I when Veritas Press publishes these books, it ends the life of some people. And it ends their life because they think they have to do everything in the book. It can kill you. We don't do everything in the book at Veritas Academy. My teachers lengthen some things. They shorten some others. They skip some things. I give them permission to do that. I now confer that permission on you. Okay? Be wise as you're using these things. Be wise as you're using these standards. They're not meant to be a rack on which to break you, but things to think about as standards for excellence. I was at a conference once and was talking to a friend, and it was based on, not on Omnibus, but on something else. And they said that the Veritas Press catalog was destroying their lives. And I mean, this, and it was. I mean, if it was more sad than funny at the moment, because this lady, I mean, she was teared up, crying, shaking. She's like, "It's destroying my life." You know, I wasn't dealing with her. I wasn't there. I wasn't the person on the point. But the answer is, okay, don't let that happen. You know, that wasn't why they published that catalog, to kill you. If you think that, you need to go talk to your pastor. Okay, that's not the purpose of standards. Is they're not to kill you. They are to give you some ideas of things out there that you want to shoot at. First standard, cultural literacy. Do they know their own story? Do they know their fathers? Okay, I think that education can be summed up. I have these fantasies, and some of my fantasies are destructive fantasies, but some of them are good. I always want to go to the local school board meeting and raise my hand. You know, when they have the Q&A time, I want to just raise my hand and I want to go. I'm going to utter this one destructive, this question that I think will destroy everything. I'm going to say, what is an education? Okay, what is it? I'm pretty sure they can't give a good answer. I'm pretty sure that at that point I can turn into a Socratic gadfly. But I've thought about an education. I get paid to think about education. And here's what I think it is. If you can answer these three questions, you've been given an education. And the better you can answer these three questions, the better education you've been given. Who am I? Where am I? And what am I doing here? Very simple questions. The depth with which you answer those questions, I think, points to the depth of your education. To know who you are, you have to know yourself as a creature created by God. To know who you are, you have to know your family. You have to know your country. You have to know your state. You have to know the Western tradition. You have to be culturally literate. Let me just tell you that today, that most children in our culture are, in this sense, in the sense of cultural literacy, they are fatherless. Okay? They are sheep without a shepherd. And what happens to sheep without a shepherd? I can sum it up in a phrase: bad things. Bad things. They follow anyone and anything. And that's the hideous kind of freak show that we see going on in our culture now, where children are following extremely crazy, harmful ideas because they don't know their fathers. Okay, first standard I would recommend is cultural literacy. These are not in order of importance. They're just listed out. The second one I would mention is Christian commitment. Christian commitment. What do your students do when they are not at school? What do they do when you are not doing your homeschooling? Are they involved in church? Is this involvement by force? By choice? What will they do on 8 a.m. on Sunday morning, the day after they move out of your house? That's a pretty important test. Pretty important test. Especially if they are at college, because no one is going to blink an eye. No one is going to blink an eye if they just hit the snooze button. This is a little aside here. If you are in the situation where you're looking at colleges, as a student or as a parent, make sure that your child knows that finding a church for them to be involved in is an important part of that process. If they don't believe that's an important part of the process when you're taking them out to look at colleges, if you just think there's a good church everywhere that you could possibly go to college, that's naive thinking, okay? Make that part of your process as you're thinking about colleges. Go and look at churches. Meet with ministers. If they're looking at colleges or if they're going to be moving out to their first job, you know, ask the question. Be parent enough to ask the question. What kind of churches are in this area? Do you have a church where you're really going to be able to be part of a Christian community following after Christ? Man, it is great. It is great when I have students asking me those kinds of questions as they're thinking about moving on to the next level. Of the graduates of my school, about 40% of them have gone on to Grove City College. Not just because I'm an alumni from there and I point them in that direction. They tend to find their way there anyway because our school's full of Grove City and Hillsdale teachers and families. And we use words, antiquated words like debt. you know, like financial stability, those kinds of things, like pay for things. So they would go to college and they run into places that don't say those things anymore and they're freaked out. So the great thing is, you know, if they're going to Grove City, they can ask me about the churches there, okay? And I can tell them, you know, here's what it was like when I was there. And here's some things that you should check out if you're this denomination or that denomination. Make that, are they going to follow through on Christian commitment? That's a standard that you should think about. The next one is Christian service. And this hits in the same kind of an area, but ask this question. Are they willing to stand for Christ in ways that are appropriate? Whether these ways are quiet, loud, popular, or unpopular? If not, then you've got more work to do in their education. This does not mean, well, there are ways to stand for Christ that fail all of these tests. So be careful that the standing for Christ is not an attention-getting mechanism, okay? Because sometimes it is. They're standing in ways that are inappropriate. Let me tell you about one of my alumni, really proud of him. A young man named Jeremy Chin. He's at Princeton now. I think doing civil engineering there. And there are a lot of things I'm proud of Jeremy about. He's a great student, great writer, great mathematician. Good, you know, could go on and give you statistics on him. As he went to Princeton, Princeton's not an easy school. They push you there. This is a statistic that I didn't know about Princeton. It's a statistic that if you want to go to Princeton, you should have this statistic plastered somewhere in your house. How many students are at Princeton? Any guesses out there? Any guesses how many undergraduate students they have? If you know, don't just give the answer, but how many do you think? 10,000? You know, that was kind of the number I went in with. For all undergraduates, they have 4,800 students. When you are applying to Princeton University, you're applying for one of 1,200 spots. So the competition, that's why it's hard to get into. Aim at Harvard or Yale, much easier. Okay, it is tough. And when I went to see him, he said, it is tough. He manages his schedule on 15-minute increments. Okay, because he knows how much he has to study. But he's involved in a Christian organization there. He goes down to Trenton to tutor underprivileged kids in Trenton. Okay? He could compete better with his 1,200 if he didn't do that. Okay? If your children are ready to serve Christ, even when it doesn't make, you know, it's kind of self-interested sense in the big competition that they're in, that's a great sign. That's a better standard than a 1600 on an SAT. Okay? Next standard. This is a very important one. Readiness for God-ordained roles. Readiness for God-ordained roles. To put a finer point on it, what sort of fathers and mothers will they make? What sort of fathers or mothers will they make? Have they seen the value in the education that you're giving to them to the point that they are living in your community as they grow up and found their own families and sending their children to be educated in this manner at the same or similar institutions? Wow. That's, if we want to see culture change, it's not going to change in one generation. And if all we do is give this kind of an education to our children or the children of this generation in a homeschool setting or in a co-op or school setting or study center setting, we have failed the test of the long run. We have to convince them. We have to help them to see the value of what they're doing in a way that they will do it with their kids. Now, I don't want you to lose heart in this. You should not take stock of this answer when they are in 7th, 8th, or 9th grade. Okay? 7th, 8th, or 9th graders don't like anything, especially if they are male. I think I could get them to turn up their nose at ice cream if I tried to force it on them. You know, you must eat this. I hate ice cream. Okay? Or as one bright 9th grader once said to me, I hate how you stereotype us as always hating things. I nodded my head. I can understand. Okay? Let me tell you a little thing that I'm convinced of too. And that is this. There's a power in Christian community. I worry. I have my worries. And my worries are that I'm educating kids that will not be part of the community that I'm part of. Okay? That they will, by powers more powerful than I have at this point, use automobiles and cars and jobs elsewhere to always be helping, being these kinds of people, but being these kinds of people not in Lancaster County. And that's happening. I mean, I have one graduate right now that lives in Belgium, one that lives in Philadelphia, one that lives in Columbus, Ohio, and one that lives under the seas in a nuclear submarine. Right now, they're not in Lancaster County. Let me just say this to you. You should want these kids, that's not normative historically. It would frighten all of our forefathers to live the way that we think is normal. Okay? The normal pattern is the Odysseus Telemachus pattern, where son takes the place of father. It's the David Solomon pattern. Okay, and I think we should long for a return to that. I'll tell you this, though. I don't think you're going to make them return by force. I don't think you're going to say to them, you must live in this community. You must live this way. If you want them to live like that wherever they live, and if you have some desire like I do that they would live where you live, that they would serve in the same community that you serve in, they will only do that, I think, so long as you build a community that's full of love and joy. Okay? If you do that, then your hope can be this, that they will find something lacking. That they will find something lacking when they go out away from it. I don't always want kids to live in Lancaster County. I would like them to go away maybe for a couple of years, and then I would like them to come back and say, I really like it here. Okay. The next thing is this. Next standard that should give you that you should think about: Do your students accidentally recruit? Do your students recruit by simply being great kids? Or in a homeschool setting, do other kids want to hang around at your home? Okay, do they want to be in the environment that's created? Let me, from a school or study center or co-op setting. If you don't have this, all of your marketing efforts are in vain because they are generally lying. Because our marketing effort, it has one focus at Veritas Academy. Get people here. Okay? We don't try to get people to fill out an application on a whim or something like that. All we want them to do, and we're not brilliant marketers, but all we want them to do is to walk down to our building and walk around for a while. When they do that, I got them, generally. If they're the right kind of people, they're going to go, that's what I want. Nothing, and I tell them, go look around. Here are the names of other places. Go walk around their buildings, and then you compare. Okay, if you want what we got, there's no place else you're going to find it. We have these great moments. They're like some of my favorite moments of Veritas Academy. They're where our kids go out on field trips and weird things happen. They're really great recruiting moments. We went to the Met once. 7th, 8th, and 9th graders in the Met. Our kids take Latin 2nd through 7th, and then they do Greek in 8th and 9th. We had a wonderful tour guide, but she was used to the large public school group. She had this shell built over her heart. Because a lot of times the kids, I guess, weren't very interested in the Greek vases that she was showing to them. So we walked up to the first vase, and she was giving us the spiel. And then one of our girls raises her hand, and she starts reading the Greek off of the vase. And the lady's like, whoa, what? These respectful little kids dressed in these beautiful uniforms. And then she just like, the shell over her heart broke. And then she started taking us around to all of these hidden things in back rooms, because our kids were actually interested in them. Do your kids recruit for you? If parents will want their children to be like the ones that they see in your study center, then they will send their children here to be part of it. If not, then they won't. The same measure goes for the home. My parents were very wise in this. They always... Let me tell you the best way that you can help control the standards that your kids have in friends, or the standards that interaction between your kids and their friends have. Throw your doors open and invite, make your house the place where people come. My parents built a swimming pool for this reason. And then everybody showed up. And my father would cook hamburgers for us, and he enjoyed eating them with us. If you have a football team like the one I was, you should probably budget for this before you do it. But no one cursed at my house. Even if they cursed in the football locker room, even if they cursed at home. Because my mom and dad were there, and they knew that wouldn't fly. Be parents like that. The next thing is this. Next standard. Think about their taste and their criticism of entertainment. Extremely important. One of my favorite writers is a guy named Wendell Berry. And Berry is a farmer in Henry County, Kentucky. He writes about small town life, like the life that I grew up in. He creates these characters of very wise older men who divides the world into these scary categories. People whose places are better for having them live in that place, and destroyers. Okay? You should not read Wendell Berry without being ready to see that part of you is the destroyer and feeling the angst of that. But with these wise men who help the places that they're in, oftentimes they have this flaw that I've noticed. They are not deeply connected to the church, and they are not conversant in the arts. If you are not conversant in the arts, your children will be at the mercy of people conversant in the arts. Okay? Because the flood is not containable. Okay? You're either going to have to make them a good critic, or they're going to be bad critics of art. Because, listen, I come from the place where the best hider-outers are. Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. We're the last stop if you want to avoid the world. I mean, we got folks that are pros at it. And their kids, my wife, one of her summer jobs was, she worked at a convenience store in Lancaster County. And the Amish kids would come in, go into the bathroom, change clothes, and go out to the party. Okay? Don't think that you're not as committed as the Amish. Looking over this crowd, I can peg them from a mile away now. You're not as committed to avoiding culture as they are. And they're not tremendously successful. Make your kids good critics of the arts and good critics of entertainment. C.S. Lewis recommends this in the book The Abolition of Man. He said that really the education of the young is a training in tastes more than anything. Here are two things that I would recommend that you use, or two standards that you should have in the arts. First, this is a kind of rhetorical approach. Some of you will not like this. And then you will have 10th graders, and I hope that you think this is pretty good. Demand first that their tastes in the arts be diverse. Okay? Demand that their tastes be diverse. And this is a great argument for when the kid falls into that rut of just liking the pop music of whatever genre that their friends like. Demand that their tastes be diverse. Some pop music, I figure my kids will outgrow. If I can, if we can listen to it together, there's something immoral, radically sinful, bad, evil, wicked, throw it away. But at some points, my kids' tastes are going to be different than mine, but I demand that you're diverse. Okay? You're not just going to like one artist or one genre. Okay? You might say, well, I don't like classical music. Well, come and listen to it with me, and I'll show you some good things. Listen to as much good music as you can when you are young, when the kids are young, and play with them while you listen to it. Tell them stories about the music. My favorite story is the story of the 1812 overture. Okay? Because no 7-year-old does not like the 1812 overture. Just try it out with me. The 1812 overture, of course, is about Napoleon's invasion of Russia. Okay, and there are all these little vignettes in the long piece. There's kind of a peasant music sound, and we all do our little peasant dance while that's going on. And there's the sounds of the different armies going back and forth, and we listen to those. And then at the end, there's the ringing of the church bells as the Russians have overcome the evil horde of Napoleon's army and driven them out. And the church bells of St. Petersburg ring in joy as the 16 cannon fire in the background. Okay, cannon fire and boys, very good. If you want to have a real fun time, just check out some websites about Lancaster County. Every 4th of July, we have the 1812 overture played correctly at Long's Park with 16 cannon lined up. Now, the former mayor of the city of Lancaster owns the cannon. I always thought that was a good reason to make someone mayor. When they're ready to drive back any invading armies from York County or Lebanon County that would throw sausage at us or something like that, we'll fire our cannon back. Okay? And we do it every 4th of July. The symphony plays the 1812 overture out at Long's Park, and they fire those cannon off. You can hear it all over the county. Make sure that their taste... Well, and then we play. And my little... one of my daughters calls it The Bad King. That's the name of that song. The Bad King. Because Napoleon is the bad king. He's come in to destroy things. And it's not... It is not without reason that there are church bells ringing when Napoleon's army is driven out. The French Revolution has been driven back. Godlessness is, again, at bay. So make sure that their tastes are diverse. Demand diversity. It's a very winsome argument. Okay? It's not you trying to shut down everything they're listening to. It's you saying, okay, I see that you like some of this stuff, but you got to like stuff in a broad sense. I like broad tastes in music. Get them some Miles Davis. Challenge them to listen to that. Also make sure that their tastes are as excellent as you can get. I think that the best way to do this is by massive exposure to good music as they are young. Okay? Find as much classical music. Mozart is wonderful for this because his music is so joyful. It's easy to be conversant with. Have special music for Sunday. We always listen to, we have some Palestrina and some Thomas Tallis that we listen to on Sunday. We listen to some music by Greg Wilbur, who's involved in classical school down in Franklin, Tennessee, in New College down there. Have some special music that really raise the taste for good worship music. Note this, that you can tell whether they're prepared if they can criticize bad art. I had an interesting story that one of my board members related to me recently, and it really made him a fan of our school. He was on a business trip with his daughter, and he was going to New York. He took her along because she wanted to go to New York, and one of the places that they stopped was the Guggenheim. So they went around to look at modern art. She stopped in front of a piece. They were sitting there staring at it. Like some pieces of modern art, hideous, I think, would be the word that first, you know, jumped to mind. And what this young lady did was she sit there with her father, and she said, she took the piece apart for him. She told him the story of all of the philosophy that led up to a piece like that being made, and then she criticized it. He came back a very happy man, okay? Because the foolish things that we see running around artistically today, his daughter was able to criticize them winsomely. When your child is able to do that, you should put a little star. You should put a star on whatever grading sheet you give yourself. That's a good thing. Okay? The last standard that I recommend is this. Love and appreciation of the education and community, which is key to the multi-generational task. Ask these kinds of questions. When they are away at college, do they long to come back? Do they want to talk with you, and what do they want to talk with you about? Note this, that the typical pattern for students today as they go away to college is to become more internal rather than external. They need to, if they don't want to talk with you about the great issues of the world or the great issues of life, that's not good. If you're reading the great books, those issues should flow out in the conversations that they have. This is one of the sweetest questions that I get asked. I'll have an alum give me a call or an email, and they'll say, "I'm going away on vacation. What should I read?" Okay? Now, don't do what I did. I didn't know this, but I had an abridged version of The Count of Monte Cristo. The abridgment is 700 pages long. Dumas was not, he had that Dickinsonian gift. I knew this young man, I said, "You'll love Count of Monte Cristo." So he got back from vacation and he got the original 1400 page version. And I said, "How'd you like it?" And he said, "What are you trying to do?" He said, "I like the book okay. I only have 400 pages in. I couldn't spend all my time reading on vacation." So make sure you check out whether you have an abridged copy or not. Are they asking you what to read? If they do that, put another little star. Okay. Finally, let's make it practical. What sort of classrooms, home, community foster these sorts of children? Number one, is it based on love? If children experience love in their home and in a school setting, they will be formed by it. They will want to be around the people that they love and that love them. Sometimes they just wish that I wouldn't assign so much work so that they could just hang out with their teachers. Okay? That's great. And I would say this too. As you get into a homeschool setting in the older years, sometimes you need Uncle Argyle, okay? The guy that I call Uncle Argyle. And that is, you need somebody who's doing this same kind of stuff, especially if you are a mom working with older boys. It's good if you can find an older man, whether it be dad, or sometimes it's even better if it's an older guy who's kind of been through and walked down this road before, who can be kind of a good mentoring influence. Sometimes kids listen to me say the same things that their fathers say, and I, as part of that community, can make... They'll listen to me in a way that they can't hear it from their dad. Maybe you can remember being this age. Maybe you can remember the same thing. I think it's a natural progression that they need more voices than just yours. And in a homeschool setting, make sure you go out and find those good Uncle Argyles in your community. The second thing is, what sort of classrooms, homes, communities foster these sorts of children? One that is patient and hopeful with them and fosters growth. Here are some little hints that I'll give you. Celebrate their successes, even their small successes. Okay? If they write a good paragraph, jump up and down because of that. We had a young man recently, and I think I discovered one of his gifts, and it's poetry. He is not a great writer, especially about abstraction. It bores him. He is a really good writer about things like donuts. You know, because he pays attention to those concrete things, like I do. So when they do something good, make a big deal out of it, even if it's a small thing. Weep over their failures. Okay, this doesn't mean you don't give them an F. It doesn't mean you don't criticize them. It means it should hurt. Okay, be committed to guiding them, but not destroying their growth. You don't have any choice in the matter of them growing. They're going to grow. Your best hope is to guide it, not to try to freeze them at some state that they're at right now. The next key is this, one that is full of joyous traditions. Look for special fun things to do. It's best if these fun things are connected to something curricular, but every once in a while, even if they're not connected to something curricular, you should just do them. And they're best. I have this problem that everything that I do kind of becomes tradition that we have to repeat every year, which makes for a really full life. We have some neat traditions, therefore, at school. Here's one that I would recommend for you. This happens on the next to last day of school at Veritas, and it's called the Barbarian Invasion. Okay, the fourth graders studied the medieval world, and they are our barbarians. The third graders are our Greeks and Romans. They serve as Romans on that day. We build little fields down in the big field behind the school. We give the Romans shields. We give both sides water balloons in plenty. The Romans walk out on the field. They always defend the school. The barbarians are coming against the school, and the girls serve as archers outside the perimeters of the battlefield. And they throw water balloons at each other, and many times missing and hitting their parents standing around watching. And they have a great time. The little Roman boys come out, and they have to go, strength and honor. They pound their chest, and then they prepare to defend the school and their little flag back here. And it's a mess. And we love it. Okay, every year, the kids, we have tension at recess because they're preparing for the invasion. You know. We also go to Redding Rocks, which is an indoor rock climbing facility, to do some things. And the kids just love it. This next week, we're starting a new tradition. We are having what we call the Shrove Tuesday Pancake Race. Okay, this is a Christian tradition that is mainly practiced in England now, which kicks off the Christian season of Lent. But the way you kick off Lent is you eat everything, because Lent is a traditional season of fasting, which we don't generally practice that fast. We just have an excuse to get together, dress up real strange in aprons and big hats, and the race is going to be a relay race running back and forth for some of our secondary students while they're flipping a pancake from a frying pan. Now, this might not seem educational, but it is fun. It is a lot of fun. And then we have all the dads up there making pancakes for everybody so we can all get together after that. Your kids should look forward to things like that happening year after year after year. It takes some work to do them, but it is a lot of fun. The next thing I would say about your home or community, if you want to foster these sort of kids, is this. It has to be one that values and participates in the things that you're trying to teach. I could say it this way. What books do you as parents read in your spare time? Sorry to be so pokey at that point, right? Note this, though. I only tell you this because kids smell fear and they have X-ray vision for hypocrisy. Okay, if you're beating them down saying, this stuff is so important to read, it's so important, you need to do it, because I'm not going to. Okay, I'm not sure if that's a good buy. They will question you on that. But if they see that what you're trying to get them to love is what you really love yourself or what you're trying to love, it's a lot more sellable to the kid. And then finally, it's also important that if it's important to you, then it will be important to them. Note this, that you as parents and teachers and tutors need to know the difference between the 10,000 things that parents desire for their children and the 10 things that make the world stop. Okay? If my child likes, I'm not a big country music fan, okay? But if Maddie likes country music at some point in her life, I will say, we do not share that love, Maddie. And perhaps I will try to share it with you, or perhaps in the long run you will not have it anymore. But, you know, I'm going to have to tolerate your love for country music. There are 10 things, though, that stop the world. Okay, if your child says, you know, I'm not following after Christ anymore, everything should stop. It shouldn't just go on like normal. Have the skill as a home, as a study center, as a community, to understand what those 10 things are. Be kind and gentle in the 9,990 other things, and make those 10 things top notch, that those are really important. Are there any, I'm a little bit over, but are there any questions that you have on this? Okay, thank you very much.